put your website to work while you play. A website works 24/7, so no matter where you are or what you're doing, people can still find you online. Start building your website today at GoDaddy.com. It starts with a .com domain. Enter promo code 199MYLF, that's 199MILF, at checkout to get your .com for just $1.99. Some limitations apply. See website for details. I'm Sophie, and welcome to Milk Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous. We like to talk about anything around here, from parenting and money issues to sex and dating. Lots of stuff. We try to keep self-help fun. So today is another parenting issue, one that is, I think, so important because it involves the safety of your kids and having an open dialogue with them, which I'm all about, right? I'm all about good communication. I hope that listening will not only entertain you, but give you some extra life tools. If you're new to MILF Talk, I'm a psychologist, life coach, and mother of two, and author of MILF 101, Make Your Life Fabulous. I am truly passionate about helping people live authentic, joyful lives. So if you ever want to write to me, go ahead, ask me an advice question. You can find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable, or you can email me at makeyourlifefabulous@gmail.com. So hit me up for some free advice. Also, I'm really happy to be able to offer you a free workbook. I've been working on this for a while. It's called A Goal Setting and Life Rescripting Workbook. I actually just did a live workshop, and I think it was pretty successful. So I introduced the idea of rescripting in MILF 101, which is really about rewriting the story of your life and getting rid of some of those old negative scripts. You don't have to read MILF 101 to understand it, though I would love for you to buy my book. but I basically include a version of that chapter in the workbook. So don't worry. It's an awesome tool, and you can get it now free, on my website, makeyourlifefabulous.com. Just enter your email and you'll get a link to the download. And then I think you're also going to get an email with the link to the download in case that link didn't work. So it's all good. So go get it. It's free. Free. So today in the studio, I have a very handsome and well-educated guest. He has extensive experience as a therapist and counselor for children, adolescents, and families, pretty much on the front lines of one of the worst drug epidemics in modern history. And unfortunately, the majority of individuals partaking in the excessive drugs are today's youth. Mendy Barron, founder and CEO of Evolve Treatment Centers, believes in prevention, which means we must be educating our kids early on and keeping parents educated as well. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mendy Barron. Woo! And let's get educated. Yes, how often do you get applause for being a counselor, right? That's what we like to do around here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, here, go ahead and get real close.
Closer.
Yeah. So thank you for being here. How are you? How's your day?
Good. Awesome.
All right. So what do you think right now? I mean, you know, some people are kind of freaked out about the legalization of pot and all of these things, but what do you think right now is the scariest drug being used by youngins?
I think the scariest drug being used at the moment is probably prescription pills.
Really?
Unlike a lot of substances, which require, you know, avoiding the law or figuring out clever ways to get them, the pills and whatnot are fairly available and accessible.
Wow. I would say that is very true in my neighborhood. I mean, I live in there's a wide range of income, but for the most part, it's a fairly affluent school district.
Sure.
And that is the reputation of a lot of the high schools, is that the kids just have tremendous access to drugs.
Yeah.
To prescription pills.
Yeah, and it's prescribed by doctors. It's accessible through the kids themselves. It's accessible through parents. It's accessible through grandparents.
Yes. Yeah.
It's fairly common. There's even a new initiative that I spoke to. There's a woman working with an organization that's trying to require that those who do the house sales, so real estate agents and so on, you do open houses. You clean up the house, you set it up, but guess what?
Oh, my gosh.
The pill cabin's wide open. And so kids will be letting themselves in. They'll wander around pretending to search for a house or pretending to be with someone's parent, and they'll raid the cabinet.
So I'm sorry. That's me with my mouth open. Yeah.
It's
God,
very
you just
accessible.
Forget about that.
Yep.
Having done a little real estate, it's like, oh, what are you doing in the bathroom?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you get good money for it.
College
campuses, it's probably the most popular drug sold.
Really? Would it be like Xanax or oh, okay.
Any stimulants, things like Ritalin.
Oh, God. Yeah, Adderall.
Adderall.
Adderall's a biggie.
A lot of kids will snort Adderall before a test. you know, and it's justified, quote unquote,
because, right,
you know, I need it. It helps me concentrate. If I snorted, it goes faster, you know, so it's, God. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you talk to kids about this? My God. I mean, I've had lots of conversations with my daughter who's 14. I actually started talking to her about it when she was about 12, maybe even 11. So I don't know. Should I have started younger? Because I've got an 11-year-old now. But they're so kind of like goody two-shoes about it, which is awesome, you know, at this point. So I feel like there is some dialogue about it still, even with my younger one. But
it's a lot harder to start the conversation. I mean, ideally, you always start the conversation. Big motto, start the conversation. You really need to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what a lot of parents do prior to talking about it, or they don't do prior to talking about it, is actually research it. You know,
yes,
you have to come in with an understanding or at least some knowledge. It doesn't mean you become the expert in drugs or go out and try it yourself a couple times, figure out how it works.
Yeah. I tried this one. Let me give you a report.
Right. Exactly. It worked okay. But, you know,
right.
You really have to be knowledgeable. And you really have to know what's affecting your kid and what's not. Mm-hmm. You have to know what's out there and who's supplying and where it might come from and where they might have access to it. And then you can enter into a conversation.
Mm-hmm. So if they ask you about something that you really don't know about, would the response be, well, I don't know a lot about that drug. Let me do some research and, you know, we can figure it out. You know?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you always, obviously, you maintain a stance that obviously this is, I'm not saying this is going to be acceptable even if I do research it.
Right.
Let's start with this is a no. And then we can talk about, you know, the varieties of no that there are.
But I'm not mad at you for asking.
Correct.
Right. I think that has to be, for me, that has to be the approach with whether it's sex or drugs or anything. It's just, okay, I'm not mad at you for asking because I'm, how are they not going to have questions? How are they? I mean, my God, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. The access, just even the talking about it is like everywhere on the web.
Media, if you listen to music, if you talk to friends, if you look at school, that's exactly where it is.
Unless you keep them in the house with no television and no cell phone and no computer forever.
Right. Right.
That's not going to happen.
No.
So.
And I think even the fact that you mentioned that you have the lines of communication with your kids is a unique thing. A lot of parents haven't even figured that part out. You know, part of starting a conversation is having a baseline, a place to start, a relationship in which you do communicate, a relationship in which, you know, you can start. I have a lot of parents who often come to us and, you know, it was okay when they were kids. They were cute. They were innocent. They went to school. You talk about snacks. You talk about friends. You talk about maybe some, you know.
The worst thing you talk about is a bad word. Is crap a cuss word?
Right. No,
that's like the biggest challenge,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And all of a sudden they come back and now they're a teenager. And there's sort of a place that they've missed and they haven't, like, well, everything was cute to find here. Now they're here. And you know, kids don't come
now they're asking me about ecstasy. Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they taking it? Are they using it? What is ecstasy? Is it the same thing it used to be?
And oh, God. Boy, that's a whole podcast right there. What the hell is in that stuff?
Right.
I mean, from what I understand, it's like you don't know what you're getting.
No.
Pretty much.
No. I mean, when you talk about the kids who pick it up at for instance, take the Hollywood Bowl, very popular place to sell ecstasy. And there are a ton of concerts there. So sorry to ruin. I could ruin almost any location.
No, so I mean, I figured that on like electronica night or reggae night or whatever. You know, I mean, I mean, I'm not dumb, but really, they're selling like shit.
Well, they're selling it in the products.
It's fucking Burning Man. It's the Hollywood Bowl. You're gonna get it shut down.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, they're watching. What's one of those? I'm lost. They're watching One Direction, for instance. And it was my teen reference.
Stop it.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not bashing One Direction.
No, I'm not. I'm just like, I don't want the little children at the One Direction concert doing ecstasy.
But they're also cutting the products with other unhealthy and dangerous products. They're not maintaining. It's not like the drugs you're buying are coming from a lab with a gentleman in a lab coat. I mean, these things are being produced in various trailers around Los Angeles and it's coming to you and they're taking
it. It's got some rat poison in it.
No, you don't know. You really
I know.
And it becomes much more serious. I mean, I even walk by a dispensary because there's one in every corner.
Right.
And I see a big sign and it says go-go maybe. Give one, get one. It was some.
Oh, give one, get one. Okay.
And basically what the concept was, you trade whatever you have in for whatever we have. So it comes along a random guy with products you don't know where it came from. This isn't FDA regulated. Again, this is not a science, although there is science involved, obviously. It's certainly not Breaking Bad. And they're trading stuff in, and then someone else is trading out. But you don't know what it was laced with, what was put into it. No one's testing it.
Right.
And then you're trading it for somebody else's.
Oh my God. Maria, did you know this? Did you know this about the give one, get one? This is crazy.
I just graduated from college. I know a terrifying amount.
Shit.
Yeah.
I'm very upset.
This is a very unregulated industry. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So when you talk about legalization, I mean, and I don't want to get into that topic.
Yeah, because exactly. You'll have to come back for that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
But at least someone should be, you know, monitoring the quality.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Okay. As a parent, okay, so it's basically the conversation that I had with my daughter was, you know, she was like, well, what's this? And you know, why do people like cocaine? And why do people like this? And what does this do? And, you know, and so I honestly told her everything that I knew. Okay. I don't find it to be my kid's business whether or not I've done them, you know, because I personally believe that kids go, well, you turned out okay. Look at you. You're happy. You own a house. You're doing this. And you tried this and this and this. I personally don't think it's their business. You know, it's not their business how old you were when you lost your virginity either. Okay. You can like have those conversations when they're adults and they can handle it and they know where to file it and they know what it even means. Right.
Sure.
Personal opinion. So anyhow, so one of the things that I went into detail with her was I said, look, so now that pot's everywhere, it's also in like candies, cookies, brownies, caramels,
edibles,
right? And she's like, really? And I'm like, yes. So here's the deal. If you're at a party and somebody sort of winks at you when they offer you a brownie or a cookie or this or that or like whatever, you know, then I said, you know, don't eat it. I said, but if you do when you're on the couch and you can't move, call me. I'll come get you because I don't want you to be, you know, too high girl on the couch that can't manage herself.
Sure.
You know, that's what freaks me out. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to get mad at you. Like, just call me because you're going to think you're going to die. And she's like, oh my God, really? Like, have you done it? I'm like, honey, I have eaten a brownie and thought, oh my God, I am never, ever, ever, ever going to breathe again. Like, you're like, don't forget to breathe. Okay. Don't forget. You know, like, and you can't move and you know, you can't move and you just feel like an asshole. I'm like, it's just terrible. And she's like, oh mom. So every once in a while she'll tease me. She's like, oh, did you have a brownie? I'm like, shut up. You know, like she's oh yeah, totally. She's so funny. So that's
she
where you got to be careful.
That's
what I'm saying. So that's where you got to be really careful what comes out of your mouth. So, that was one place where I did tell her like, that's, you know, I said, you won't die, you know, you'll be okay, but you need to call me so that I can make sure that you're someplace safe.
Yeah.
Right.
Getting a safety plan.
Yeah. So, it was very interesting to have the conversation because, I think my girls value their brains, you know? And so when she was asking me, you know what I mean? Like, so she was asking me, well, what does this do? And she asked me about ecstasy. I'm like, I don't really know a lot about ecstasy because I know that what I know is that it's a manufactured drug that can be a lot of different things, you know, and,
sure.
and this is what it does. And it, you know, it messes up your neurotransmitters, you know, and I was explaining serotonin and all that crap, you know? So that kind of like, she was like, God, why would anybody want to do that? You know, I'm like, well, I guess they think the high is worth it. But from what I understand, the low is really low and, you know, it can eventually really hurt you if you,
yeah.
You know, so I try to make it not like that shit's going to kill you, you know, because that doesn't make sense, right? Because their friends are still alive.
Sure.
Right? You know, I won't call anybody out. Other teenagers that I know.
I saw the
trying
pause
to.
There.
I'm like, you know, like I don't want to like
filter for
filter,
names.
Filter, 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 filter,
yeah.
You know, protect people's privacy. But, you know, teenager, high school is like, my friends are such idiots. They like go walk around the mall on ecstasy. And she literally was like, this is like the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But so she knows her friends are still alive, right?
Yeah.
But she doesn't respect it.
Right.
But she's, you know, saying, and this isn't my daughter, this is somebody else's daughter. But they're doing it. So if you tell a kid, oh, that will kill you, it's like, well, it didn't kill this person over here. So you can't throw that argument at them.
There's a yes and no. I mean, I certainly think it's worth informing teens about the effects.
Yeah. I mean, it is possible, of course.
It is possible. And if you look statistically speaking, while many do make it, many don't.
Many don't,
and
sure.
Do you really want to be that straw? Do you want to really have a 50-50 chance?
Exactly.
You can do this and be totally...
Oh, like cocaine. My
right.
God. Ugh.
Yeah, you can do this and be date raped or be attacked or have severe brain damage or crash your car or something like that. Or you could survive because they did. But that doesn't happen to everybody.
Right.
I mean, when you look at, statistically speaking, when you look at the amount of deaths caused by a variety of uses in a variety of settings,
yeah,
they're basically taking a chance.
Taking a chance.
How many people want to play that chance? So
I
definitely believe in letting them know the effects without becoming a fear monger in any sense.
Right. And I guess that's what I mean is that if you simplify and sort of shut them down by saying, don't do that, it'll kill you. It's like, I feel like it needs to be a little broader conversation.
Absolutely.
Of like these are the risks that you're taking.
You have to come from an informed place.
Yes. Like I know, people doing this and they seem to be okay, but let me tell you the risks that they're taking,
yeah.
Right? More.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree with, a lot of parents debate, well, should I tell them? It'll help me get closer to them. That's a pretty tough debate. Telling a kid you use doesn't always make them closer to you. They can use it against you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to tell them, if some parents, I can hear the stance where parents might want to tell them, but that has to be done for a purpose, not for the sake of bonding, not for the sake of, if you ever brought
or it being
up.
Cool.
Or being
yeah.
cool or connecting.
Oh, God.
If you ever brought it up,
yeah.
It should be for a specific purpose. Trust
mm-hmm.
me, you don't want to go here. You don't have to go into detail and go, oh, you think you use, trust me, I use, blah,
mm-hmm.
it's stretch out the list.
It
really would have to be in a very specific circumstance.
Yeah. So what do you think this statistic that I've heard that only 9% of teenagers are taking up cigarettes at this point?
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, I guess it used to be 40%. Now it's like 9%, nasty habit. But then we've got the vapor pens.
Right. Why think of cigarettes if you can
vape? Yeah. Which they think has no negative effects.
Correct. And also from the monitoring perspective, they can also put different things in the vapors that now you can't necessarily tell smell.
Right.
So it's more popular.
Oh,
I think.
God. Are people putting heroin in those things?
No, I don't know about heroin, but...
No, because for a while people were actually smoking it in cigarette form, weren't they? They were like rolling it and late. They were like, this is like... I want to say like, how old am I now? Jesus. This is like 10, 15 years ago. It was social to smoke heroin, like laced into tobacco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about heroin. I haven't heard that, but certainly in these various vapor forms.
Yeah.
There's a variety of options.
Oh God, I hope not.
Jesus, that
just scares the crap out of me. It really does because I know a couple kids that I've known since babies who at that time when that's how people were doing it because it, you didn't have to use a needle.
Right.
He got hooked.
Yeah.
His whole life,
And every time it comes, when you deal with substance, they find some less serious way of dealing with it. Oh, cigarettes. Well, they have a filter, so it's okay. Or, this, that, the other.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's
I'm not using
vapor.
Needles. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's these justifications that everyone makes and that the folks who sell it make so that you can continue to use.
Right.
Oh, it's okay that I can snort Adderall because she takes Adderall, right? It's prescribed by her doctor.
Isn't it enough to take it?
Right.
My God.
But the doctor is monitoring the kid that he's prescribing it to, and
right.
it's based off a specific need. And
oh,
if you take it without that specific need, you can actually have incredibly detrimental effects. But looking at other people and going, well, they do it, it's not necessarily a model for okay, now it's safe. So, okay, they did it. They survived. You won't die. It can be very, very serious.
Wow.
Take the study we were talking about earlier, but, pot. We talk about smoking pot and we go, okay, it's fine. It's okay. Well, again, leaving the whole legalization piece out of it.
Oh, yes. Because like 3 weeks ago, there was some study that it's like, it doesn't lower your IQ. I'm like, but you're not helping.
Right.
Who paid for this study?
Yeah. Yeah. But this past week, they came out with a study that very clearly shows, obviously it's not a longitudinal study. It needs a lot more work, but it essentially shows that pot has a tremendous effect on the brain, meaning it physically changes it. So it's no longer, oh, I smoke, and then once I'm not high, everything's okay. It actually shrinks the frontal cortex, which is responsible for decision making. And secondly, the impact of it is much more significant with teens. So again, when you talk legalization, you can leave the adults out of it for a second, although we can talk about that later.
Right, right.
But with teens, not only does it have a detrimental effect because they're teens and because their brain is developing,
right.
but it's also literally shrinking, physically shrinking the brain in an irreversible fashion and shrinking the part that handles decision making. So you have hormones and you have brain developing and you have peer pressure and you have growth and you have moods and you have everything affecting you. And then
you're going to go shrink the damn brain on top of it.
Correct. So now your impulses are already challenged as a teenager.
Genius.
And you're fighting up a hill. And now we shrink it further.
Right.
So, effects, you know, knowing the effects and knowing how to discuss that and having coming from a place of, knowledge is absolutely critical.
Well, you know, something that I've even talked to my girls about is the fact that drinking, because my daughter has admitted to me, she goes, God, I have friends my age that drink. Like, that's why? That's so stupid. God bless you. So far, so good. I know. I'm really lucky. No, I'm really lucky.
Knock on wood.
Okay, wait. Remind me to come back to this because I'll tell you a story. I took my girls to be, and I'm not like patting myself on the back because I take no credit for this. It's genetics, okay? I took my girls to be tested because they were like kind of borderline on that like gifted, what is it, gifted, talented thing, okay? And so they're like, oh, we just want to test them, you know, blah, 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 to make sure because like going from like K through five to the next school.
Sure.
So I think they were either like 8 and 11 or 9 and 12, and they go in and they get tested and they come out and the ladies that like gave them the test, they're like, your daughters are there. You're fine. Like they're awesome. Like, God, this one, she's reading at a K, you know, 12th grade level. And this one, she's going to be president. And this one, you know, they're like sort of teasing. As my girls are, you know, they're getting all like, hey, I'm so smart, you know? So we get in the car and I'm like, okay, so you're smart. Good. Okay. Don't fuck it up.
Right.
You know, I'm like, look, this is a gift. You were blessed with good brains. Don't mess them up. Like, cause you have control over that. Like yeah. Every drug you take, every drink you take, everything affects your brain. And like, you like this, you like being smart. Being smart gives you options in the world. Don't mess it up.
Yeah.
Like, that was the conversation the second we got in the car. Cause it was just an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, you're all high on how smart you are. That's great. Okay, come back down to earth for a second and let me explain to you what your responsibility is.
Yeah.
This is a gift and your responsibility is to treat it well.
No, absolutely.
So I think like, you know, if you can build on what your kids have, that's good. And explain to them that this staying clean thing is to maintain it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's also about squander it.
It's about choices. You know,
yeah.
Right now, you know, and we talk about when a lot of teens end up in treatment, they're at a point where the choices have been taken away from them. At this point,
yeah.
You're in treatment and the choice is not
yours. It's gonna be heartbreaking.
Yeah.
How do you look at that all day? It's gonna be just heartbreaking.
It's a challenge, but the beauty of working with teens is that you have an opportunity to intervene at a time when you can really make a significant difference.
Yeah.
And when a teen arrives,
it's not too late.
Yeah,
right.
It's not too late, and they arrive and they're like, you know, fuck this, fuck my parents, to hell with all this, and you guys don't know anything, and you take away from the drugs, and they're like, well, or you know, a lot of them are struggling with other things as well, a lot of mental health issues, but they land there and it's like, well, now what? And it's like, well, now's your chance before it becomes even worse to start taking your choices back. You know, everything's been made for you till
like
now.
That.
When you started, when you started, you know, when you look at a kid who hasn't used and you converse them the way you did, you're saying, look, you've got choices, you've got options, you've got school, you've got a future, you can go where you want. You don't have as many rules limiting you. You have trust, you have autonomy, you sort of have a lot of options. And as they choose essentially to step into various realms, the thing they should think about first and foremost, we're all egocentric as teenagers, is
of course.
What am I going to lose? Well, here's where you're going to start losing autonomy. You're going to start losing physical health. You're going to start losing your ability to do your own things. We're going to start regulating you. You're going to start losing trust. You can lose your friends. And slowly your options start to deteriorate. So if you truly want a chance to take your life in your own hands, this is it.
Right.
And catching them at the beginning, letting them know, like, here's where you are now and here's where it can be, is a great way to do it.
Wow. So when you talk, I would imagine you have some kids that have issues with alcohol too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, one thing I've tried to, explain too is that the reason the drinking age is 21 is because they actually tried to lower it to 18. It didn't work. It's like kids were dying basically because your brain's not done developing, right? And you're frontal lobe is already still not developed, especially if you've been smoking weed, apparently.
If you can find it.
Right, if you can find it. Yeah, and there were more accidents, you know, more drunk driving accidents, basically. There was just, it was not good, and they had to raise it back up.
Yeah.
And I think of alcohol as such an alluring addiction. Like, it's just everywhere. It's so social, you know, and it's shocking to me how many kids where it's not well, it's not social in the way it is for adults. You know, it's more like secretive and that kind of social. They're not like sitting around with cocktails. Yeah, exactly. You know, that that they get hooked so easily, you know. I don't know if it's genetic or what, but they seem very vulnerable to it. And how do you get that kind of recovery?
Well,
it seems
you touched on one component. The genetic piece is an actual piece.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a friend of mine calls it the genetic gift bomb. You know, if it's in the family, they have a predisposition to it. And so while one kid, I was asked to say, well, you know, this kid, how do you explain to your kid? Well, he goes, well, my friend uses it and they're just fine. Well, that's not available for everybody. It's unfortunate, but you have to address the fact that if your parents used, or if there's alcoholism in your family, you are going to have a hell of a time with this. And it's not just, you know, you can't just do it. Alcohol is tougher because, like you said, it's socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. They see their parents with it. They see it in other situations. It's more accessible. Mm-hmm. So alcohol is certainly a challenge. And a lot of times when we get the teens in our centers, the biggest struggle is dealing with that component, even though the addiction itself is very significant.
The physiological addiction.
It can have alcohol poisoning. There's a whole slew of issues associated with it. The bigger issue is, well, now that you're going to get this kid stable, how do you change the situation around them? Because it's still there.
Yeah.
And parents are still doing it and they're not locking it up. And they don't know what it is or how to access it. And the companies who sell products are making them look surprisingly like other things. So you can switch out a bottle of mouthwash for certain types of alcohol of the same color. And you don't recognize it, you know, and then you talk about the influence of energy drinks and the promotion of, you know, energy drinks and alcohol. And so you're essentially, you can keep them, and we do really
we're doomed.
Good work with them.
Forget it. Okay, but I'm going home.
It's about addressing where they're going to, you know, when they leave, what they're going to do, what they have access to, and really creating a system around them to continue the prevention afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a question for you. Do you find teenage girls in your practice who started using as part of an eating disorder, you know, using stimulants to not eat?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that when I was younger, it was like the big Dexatrim, phenylpropanolamine, all of that crap over the counter that you could, you know, buy and you take like four of them and then like your head would buzz.
Our focus.
But you wouldn't eat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a plethora of options at this point.
I know.
Again, I'm not a doomsday. Well, we don't actually treat eating disorders specifically. We actually refer out to professionals to deal with
it. So you would have to differentiate, is this an addiction to the drug or is this part of an eating disorder?
Correct.
Right.
And a lot of times it's an interchange. So depending on which one is the primary issue of concern, we will send them to an eating disorder center.
Right.
We will work with them there. Then they'll send them back to us. And then we will continue to have an eating disorder specialist see them at least once or twice a week, just to make sure that part is taken care of.
Right.
Because in addition to the actual substance, then you have all the side effects.
Yeah.
When you talk about the binging and the purging and the eating habits and all that, and that requires its own focus. Mm-hmm. And then when that's at least mitigated to an extent, then they come back to us and we can address the other components. Why are you using? What is contributing to the use?
Right.
How do you get off the physiological component? How do you get the family together and united in a way that they understand what the problem is, know how to deal with it, and can keep, you know, the clients safe following treatment, the teen. I mean, we deal with teenagers. So they come from the home, which is where, you know, everything happens and takes place, but then they go back to the home.
So it's all your fault, parents. Sorry.
that's
onus on you.
Yeah. Well, they don't grow up in a bubble.
No,
And what you do matters.
But there is an awful lot of influence out there.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's why I just think the dialogue is so crucial from an early age, that open dialogue, whether it's about, even if it's about like, if your kid can't come to you and say like, I didn't do my homework, you know, like it's some, like, you know, they're 9 years old and they're like, I didn't do my homework, and you blow up at them. Why are they going to come to you and say, so my friend offered me a cigarette today?
Yeah.
Like, why? You know, it's like this, there has to be this priority of connection.
You have
with
to
your
start
child.
The conversation. It's as simple as talk about football. It's as simple as you need to create a groundwork where a place where they know that they can trust you to say yes. So that they know when you say no, it means something. You can't always start the conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah. If the conversation always starts with you're going to get no.
No will lose its value.
Correct.
No completely loses its value if you use it all the time.
Right.
Right?
You have to gear up from the beginning. You have to be constantly looking at, how can I continue to develop a relationship? How can I continue to connect with them on various levels? So that when the time comes, when the hot topic shows up, then you can address it. And address it from a place of both knowledge and a relationship.
And it will show up. Right? That's what you, like, that's what parents have to understand. This will show up. I don't care where you live. Yeah. Right? I mean, you cannot think, oh, my kid won't have that question.
No.
I mean, I get it. Like, it's very hard for me to imagine my 11-year-old being around that, you know, just based on kind of who she is and the friends she chooses and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Give me, like, what, 700 days? I'm going to be...
You'll hear from me again. Yeah.
You know, I found something in so-and-so's backpack. Oh, great. You know, like, I mean, who knows, right? Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah. And then you're flipping on the internet trying to find the right book and the right person and getting the answers that you need.
Exactly. My dad can't, I don't know if I told this story on air yet, but my daughter was offered a piece of candy, you know, like an apple sour. And they're like, oh, you want an apple sour? And she's like, you know. She kind of hesitates for sugar.
Wow.
I know. She's like, you. Which, no, it's obsessive. I still say, but no, she's great. And another person looked at it and went, oh, those look like snaps or something. I don't know what they, but it was some like weird little word. And she was like, huh? Like, she's like, I don't know what it was, Mom. It kind of just looked like a candy to me, but I don't know if it was like pot or some other weird thing, you know.
Sure.
and she's like, so I just kind of was like, nah, thanks, I'll pass, you know. She's like, it would have been nice to have a piece of candy, but
not
no.
worth it.
Yeah. Not worth it.
Not that candy.
I'll get that call.
All the calories and that other stuff that could happen.
Yeah. Right. all that tripping.
Yeah,
you know. So it's already happened. You yeah. know, I mean, it, for all we know. For all we know, somebody was offering her some acid. Like, who even knows, right?
Yeah.
And she's 14.
Yeah. And when you talk about exposure, yes, you can have the best house ever and you can be yeah. doing things wonderfully and you can be the perfect parents
yeah.
If that exists. And then
no,
they go to school.
Doesn't.
Yeah. they're in the school environment and you yeah. can't control that. You yeah. can't control what they're exposed to.
Right.
And part of the onus obviously is in the school, but you have to connect with the school.
Right.
And you have to know what's going on and sort of be involved, not in a helicopter way, but
right.
but know what's going on and be able to connect with them and hold the system essentially accountable.
Well, that brings us to the school issue because, you know, people are very up in arms about the school teaching their kids about sex, right? Yep. But we kind of rely on the schools to some degree to teach our kids about drugs, right? Yeah. And I know my kids have already gotten a couple of, you know, people coming and talking about it and telling
those.
This. You've done those. Okay.
Yeah.
So I know you have the center, but tell us about what do you do when you go into schools? How old are the kids? Like,
So, you know, we go into a variety of schools. We started this initiative called Mendy's Place where we created a website and work on an app and where families can interact and ask questions and teens can interact.
An app?
We're working the app.
Apps. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. We're working a couple cool projects to enable families to communicate. And the whole purpose of Mendy's Place is to start the conversation.
It's to
help families engage with their teens and help teens engage with the family. So it's not a parent, you know, centric focus where we're like all focused on how do you fix your teen? And it's not just a teen, like how do you deal with my parents? And
it's sort of, right.
it's sort of a combo act and involves, you know, input from teens as well as parents. It's a really cool concept, but we started, you know, schools will approach us and say, well, we'd like you to speak about this in this topic. And a lot of times it'll have really great effects. The school can embrace it. Sometimes it doesn't. A lot of schools will bring you in to speak just to prove that we don't have anything going on in our school, you know?
Oh, interesting.
And,
okay.
And when you bring up topics, the school will be, oh, no need to really go there. We don't, this problem doesn't exist. And it becomes a challenge when obviously in reality, after each time we speak, we have, you know, tons of teenagers come up and they want to talk about it. They want to talk about issues.
Right.
And we really encourage dialogue with the schools and the parents. But there is a sort of concept where the parent hands them off to the school.
Mm-hmm.
They went there during the day and they come home at night. And what happens there is there. And I hope my kid has mm-hmm. education. We have our parent teacher conferences and that's it.
We generally have to sign a release, I think, don't we, for the kids to attend those.
Yeah, usually the schools will request a release from
yeah.
parents. But there needs to be more of an engagement. And often we go to schools and then we talk and the kids talk to us. We go, well, here's the following 20 issues that have been brought up. We really recommend you educating the parents. And we'll also speak for parents.
Oh, interesting.
And that the parents should connect with the schools. We're not going to make a big scene and call out, here's, you got 50 issues right here. Look at this. It's more like, you know, parents in the schools, you need to be really intertwined with your kid's school in the sense that they know who you are. You know who they are. You know how to connect. When your kid says, you know, I went here today. well, how do you verify that? Right, I'm going home for the school activity to my friend's house, or this is, you know, this happened in school. You need to be able to call school and say, here's, you know, what I'm hearing is happening. How do we address it? How do we work together to create a system? Because one huge part of a kid's life is school.
Yeah.
And we're
all
and
day,
we're,
every day.
That's it. And the predictors are there. You can see, you know, when the school grades drop and when they're social withdrawal and they're having issues. But when we see the issues, they're predominantly in middle school and high school. And there's a
kids
lot.
Going to middle school high, like every day.
Yeah.
Seriously. No, they are. They're like, you know, they do an edible in the morning and they're high. And they'll say like, dude, I'm totally high. I was like, what?
And there's school, you know, the dealers in the school and there's, you know, it's a tricky situation. And especially when you look at a lot of the private schools, it's, you know, even trickier with the reputation piece and whatnot. You know, who wants to have to go search backpacks in your school and who wants to go and say, you know, we're going to have to start drug testing students and so on. It's a challenge. But the reality is that, again, the other half of their life is in school.
Yeah. I wonder if that's why they don't let the kids take the backpacks into their classrooms.
And that wouldn't stop anybody.
No, that wouldn't stop anybody. But isn't that weird? But yeah, some kid got busted. He got suspended for having weed in his locker, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a big deal. Like everybody knew about it.
Well, then they probably vilified that one kid and said, problem solved.
Yeah. Oh, we got rid of all the weed.
It. Fixed.
That one kid. Well, so if I want to, if somebody says like, you know, what's this red pill or this thing that looks like this? Like, is there a good source online? I mean, do you go to, you know, WebMD? Do you go to?
I was about to say if.
Yeah.
The problem with going on.
I mean, not to buy them, to find out what they are.
No,
to find out what they are.
When you go on WebMD, you know what happens when, I mean, being a psychologist, you're aware that when you go to Psych 101, you start diagnosing yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And when you go to WebMD, you do the same thing.
I know. We're all going to die. Oh, my God. I made a mistake. I'm dying tomorrow.
I recommend going to a professional.
Okay. Okay. But I mean, like in the moment, right? Like somebody.
If you find,
like,
if you like, find a red
find
pill,
something, yeah.
Very simple.
Right.
Take a picture of red pill.
Yeah.
And contact a local treatment center and ask them.
Okay.
Or take it to
your local treatment center. Interesting.
Or a local police department. There's no legal issue with you. Bring it to them.
Oh, okay.
And you go, hey, there's this pill. I found it. Where do you find it? I'm sorry. I you know, I found it somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
on the ground.
On the ground.
Yeah. What is it?
I'm curious what it is.
Yeah.
And either they'll identify it or at least they'll give you direction. Online is tricky because there's just so many options
right.
and you can't verify where you're getting it from.
Okay.
I mean,
what if you just took it to like a Rite Aid pharmacist or something? Might they know or no?
Ecstasy is not something they prescribe.
Oh, I see.
So when you
okay,
talk about
yeah,
the kinds
so,
of pills.
Right. So it wouldn't necessarily be a prescription drug. It might be.
It could be anything.
Okay. So apparently ecstasy can look like a red pill.
I'm just saying, pharmacists. I'm sure a pharmacist cannot comment.
Right. Okay.
On pills
I gotcha.
That they're not used to prescribing.
I gotcha.
At least
okay.
Not without calling themselves out in some way.
I see. Gotcha.
But
okay.
But
well, it would just seem that they would be part of their education.
I'm sure there
you know.
Are there are websites
yeah.
that can address it. I don't recommend
okay.
using websites
okay.
as a diagnostic tool.
All right.
But I'd say you find a local treatment center, a local practitioner, a police department, those kind of things. You can go in without incriminating.
See, that wouldn't have occurred to me. No, I mean, wouldn't have occurred to me to go to
yeah.
them because that makes sense because this is not a legal drug. And so these people in these legal professions aren't supposed to know what it is.
Right. And they're probably if you're a licensed pharmacist, you're probably not allowed to give professional commentary
on those things.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's just not something you prescribe. So you don't, you know.
All right.
And obviously, the FDA doesn't have anything to say about it. So,
right. Yeah. And you know what? The cops, most of them, I don't think they're going to be like, so where did you find? I mean, you know, and if
no.
they ask, they're going to try to help you.
Right.
Right. They don't want your kid doing that either.
Right.
So,
correct.
Yeah. So, wow. Really, really interesting. You have to come back when you get your app ready too, so that you can, we can like refresh
it's
everybody
really cool.
and remind. Yeah. It's going to be
yeah.
cool. I'm excited. I'm
kind
excited.
Awesome.
So overall, give us our little like spiel. We want to start talking young, right?
You want to start talking young. You want to start working on the relationship long before you have to talk about the serious issues.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get yourself educated in serious issues long before you talk about those.
Mm-hmm.
You want to engage everybody involved in your child's life, especially when it comes to prevention. You need to know who's, again, to separate from being a helicopter parent and obsessing and logging into their Facebook and doing all that, of which, you know, can go both ways.
Yeah.
I can see why parents would do it.
Sure.
But you can also see why it would scare a teen away.
Sure.
So at this, you have to be able to connect with them in a way that doesn't push away your kid.
Right.
And so engaging with the school, having open dialogue with the school, having an open dialogue with your kids, with their friends' parents, mm-hmm. with their extracurricular folks, with your own family. You'd be surprised mm-hmm. how much access they have. Again, when you go to grandma's house, grandma's got to know how to be careful. And if yeah. Uncle Alan's an alcoholic, well, you're going to want to talk about his exposure and how and around, especially the holidays are coming up. You yeah. have to be able to engage with every aspect of your kid's life without being too obsessive.
Yeah.
But having an open dialogue with them and the system and your kid, and then also having education. Education is key to doing all of this.
Wow. Yeah. I'm just thinking about the
holidays are the worst time.
I'm just thinking about like that's crazy. That's right. You're going to all these people's houses.
We see the greatest spike in overdoses really? And relapses and attendance to treatment and hospitalizations wow. during the holidays. This is a time when you better know mm-hmm. what's out there, where you're going, who's at the party, what's at the party. And
well, this is going to air like what a couple weeks before Thanksgiving, so that's yeah. good. And everybody, check your cabinets, clean them out now.
No, yeah. And when you talk about your family, if you and your family get wasted at the holidays, you might want to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I try not to get
family tradition. Not you, but
no, but I mean, really, even like wine. Like I don't like to get drunk in front of my kids.
Yeah,
you know, because I'm kind of a lightweight. They think it's cute. They're yeah. like, oh, mommy's so funny on wine. You know, they think it's yeah.
It's not about
funny.
Abstinence for adults. It's about responsibility. It's
right. Yeah. Well, I tell my kids to, I started telling them when they were pretty young, you know, and they started wanting diaries and stuff. And I said, look, your diary is totally private unless I think something's wrong. And then you have no privacy because my job is to keep you. They need to know. And I've reminded them all the time. Sure. My job is to keep you safe.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. It's safe and educated and loved, you know, from point A to point B here. And if I think that you're in trouble, you don't have privacy.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's where the line is drawn. I mean, I think that's fair, right? Yeah. Like, you know, I totally respect your privacy. I don't want to read your stuff. You know, it's all good unless I think that you're in trouble.
You had trust and privacy and then you lost it.
Right.
It's a choice.
Right. Yeah, I mean, who knows? And they might not be doing anything illegal. They might be, you know, starving themselves or doing something crazy, you know, or, you know, who knows, right? Yeah. Just like self-destructive things. Correct. And if I think you're sick, if I think you have a problem, if I think you're depressed, if I think something's going on that I need to know about, then I'm going to do whatever I can to find out. Of course, I'm going to come to them first.
Sure.
You know, but they have to understand that this is the privacy is a privilege, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So... So do you want to take a little quiz just for fun?
A quiz?
A little MILF quiz. Yeah. You know, it's easy.
Okay.
You won't fail. Oh. So.
Test anxiety okay. now.
Yeah. I mean, did you need some Adderall?
Thanks.
All right. Focus. All right. First word that comes to mind when you hear MILF.
Should I say?
Sure. Yeah. It's internet. You can say whatever you want.
What it stands for, I guess.
Okay.
Was a teenager once myself.
Right. What turns you on creatively?
Music. I'm a musician.
Oh, nice. What do you play?
A guitar and sing.
Nice. What turns you off creatively?
Turns me off creatively. Very restricted ways of thinking, I guess.
Right. Narrow-mindedness. What sound or noise do you love?
Fountains.
What?
I buy them for my treatment centers and everyone hates them.
Oh, really? But you like them.
I love them. People tell you, it sounds like someone's urinating. Everyone's in the bathroom all the time. Why do you like fountains? Every fountain I bought for any treatment center I put into, it inevitably ends up outside in the garbage.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Don't waste any more money on fountains.
I have an app now called Fountains. What is it?
There yeah. you go. A little white noise app. What sound or noise do you hate?
Oh, got a couple options there. I don't know. Cars grinding to a halt.
Yeah. What's your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
It's really useful,
it just,
isn't
it? It just feels, when Fights. You say it, just gets it out there.
Right? It's just
yeah.
very useful word. What is your favorite substitute curse word? You must have to come up with them, right?
I go darn or dang or this stuff instead of the shit and things like that.
Yeah. Boy, that would take to say stuff instead of shit, that would be hard.
Well, again, when you're in in the treatment center and when you're with kids,
yeah,
your lingo switches to match them.
Right.
But then when you step out into another zone, if it continues, everyone looks at you in total shock. You know, you just said what? Like, well, what? It's just very common.
You're like, wait, it was 30 seconds ago. Like,
yeah. Exactly.
What profession would you not like to do?
Accounting.
Let's see. Favorite song to sing in the shower?
I don't sing in the shower. Damn.
You just don't know you sing in the shower. So we're going to have to ask your wife.
Right?
Right? Okay. Favorite song to sing in the car then?
Well, John Legend has this new song. What would I do without you? Can't remember how it goes.
No?
He has a new song, a new John Legend song.
All right. That one.
Can't remember that
okay,
one.
Okay, yeah, don't sing too much of it. We might have to pay for it. Favorite song.
Is that what that was? No. Got it. Oh.
Favorite song to sing for karaoke after two drinks, if you drink. Here but of course you don't
you.
Drink.
I don't drink, but yeah. Karaoke Here Without You by Three Doors Down.
Oh, nice. So if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I didn't do too much damage.
Nice damage control, Mindy. Yeah.
Way to keep it in line.
Yeah. That's right. Well, thank you so much for being here and giving us so much truly useful information. I think this is really, really important. So tell us how people find you. Plug all your stuff.
Plug my stuff.
Yes.
So I have a series of treatment centers. We deal with teens who are struggling with mental health and addiction issues. We have a variety of levels of care from inpatient to outpatient and a variety of wonderful locations and excellent clinical team. And
all over the country?
All over Southern California.
Southern California.
Right now.
Okay.
What makes our programs unique, in addition to obviously our awesome clinical team, is we really put a strong focus on where teens are going, where they want to go, and how they're going to get there. We build on passions that when they leave, they have what to live for and what to build on.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we find if they don't have something to plug into when they leave, they tend to fall back in the same habit.
Right.
So we really try to help them form an identity while they're with us. Mendy's Place is going live right now. I think you can find the website. And there's also a Facebook page. We really encourage people to contribute information, blogs, articles, questions, comments, so we can respond to them.
Cool.
You can find me on Psychology Today. I'm a writer for them. You can find us on Facebook.com/Evolve Treatment and evolvetreatment.com. Mm-hmm.
And Mendy's Place is M-E-N-D-I.
Yes, D-I. Sorry, yes. Uh-huh. D-I-S. It's not with
Place.
A Y.
Right.
If you Google Mendy Barron, you might find some of my old music. Don't.
Cool.
old stuff. I'll have new stuff out at some point.
That's cool.
We encourage people to reach out. And if you send us an email or send me mendyb@evolvetreatment.com, more than willing to answer questions or help with any issues.
Nice. Very, very nice. Well, thank you so much for all of that. If you would like to support MILF Talk, take your generous self to patreon.com/MILF Talk. You can find me and Like Me on Facebook at Sophie Venable. You can find my book, MILF 101, on Amazon. It's also on BarnesandNoble.com now, iBooks, Nook, all those digital outlets. And get your workbook. Get your free workbook. MakeYourLifeFabulous.com. And that's it. Thank you for being here. That's our show today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me.